from the time that they pronounced me dead was a good 45 minutes.
They cut my clothes and then they paddled my heart, because my heart had stopped. And I could see people screaming and crying, but I didn't realize that was actually my physical body because I was somewhere else.
The only thing that I could feel, if you could imagine, absolute love and peace. There wasn't anything else to be felt.
I was greeted by people I'd known in the past.
I'm back home again.
Incredibly safe and felt at home.
Welcome, welcome to Round Trip Death. And we're excited to have our guest on today, Rebecca. How are you, Rebecca?
Oh, I'm doing good, thank you.
Coming from Wisconsin, what's it like there right now?
Ooh, today is beautiful. Just sunny, the breeze is blowing. I sent the kiddos to the park because the slides aren't too hot. So it's one of those perfect spring days, summer days.
Yeah, it's by the way, early summer when we're recording this, for those that are wondering. I know it does get cold there in the winter, but we don't need to get into that. I'm going to just let everybody know, this is going to be fun today. We're going to talk about an experience that Rebecca had when she was 5 years old, and then another one quite a few years later in life. Maybe we can figure out how to tie those things together just a little bit. But in the meantime, we want to get to know you for a second. Tell us a little bit about Rebecca.
Sure. I'm go by Mom. So I have a tribe of kiddos that are, a lot of them are homeschooled. Some do go to public school. So that's the first job. I've made a career out of photography and building a life around kids and family. And I have found solitude in music. So I kind of live an artisan's life.
What kind of music do you play?
All the above. No. rock and roll. I play cello specifically. So we like to say we play music from across the genre, from Bob Dylan to Pink Floyd to some personal ones that we've created, just about anything.
I'm trying to picture cello in Pink Floyd music. I'm going to have to hear some sometime.
I will be sure to send you a link.
Okay. I'm looking forward to it. Well, let's go way back in time. Tell us what was going on when you were 5 years old. I know it was a ski day, but give us paint a picture of what's going on this day.
Yes. It was 1986 was the year, and I was 5 years old. It was a family hobby of ours that we hit the ski hill on the weekends. So I was raised on skis. So by five, I was on my own, and I could navigate just about any run on that at our local resort where we skied. My dad was an instructor, so he would send me along to go ski with my friends, and I'd go, and he'd teach, and we'd meet up at the end of his shift. So he was just finishing up. He said, take one more run. And I was with a girlfriend of mine, and we had created our own ski hill. And when I say our own ski hill, it was through the woods, and it was a little cat track that we had to go through the powder to just make our own trail. It was very exciting. And so much so that we even took Skittles, the little candies, and we put them down the trail so that we could remember our tracks, because it was such a fun little through the woods. So when we got the last call, I was really excited to go do that last hill again. Little did we know that the last hill would be the last run for a very long time. We had gotten started, and I was following the rainbow trail down the hill, and I lost control on my skis and hugged a tree right smack dab in the center. Mm. I hit the ground. I was not lifeless, but I had knocked myself out pretty hard. There was a lot of blood. Thankfully, my friend that I was skiing with was able to get help.
By the way, let me just interject. Back then, we didn't wear helmets skiing like everybody does now.
Yes, there was no helmets. In fact, I had a little bunny hat. It was a white hat with these little rabbit ears. That was my hat that I was wearing while skiing through my bunny trail down following the rainbow.
So you wrapped yourself around a tree, smacked your head, friend goes for help. Are you conscious?
About that point, I think I was started the in and out of consciousness. I know my head hurt really, really bad. I could hear the screams for help. I was somewhat coherent when the rescue team arrived to put me on the board or on the backboard to take me down the hill. Once I got loaded and they were bringing me down the hill, it was such a rocky ride on my head that I astral projected out of my body at that point. I went up to the treetops and sat and watched the rescue team take my body in a toboggan down the hill. And while I was in the trees, I can say there was an angelic being or somebody near me. So I was never really alone sitting in the trees. I was not afraid by any means. It was just more of watching the scenes unfold kind of in front of you.
I think that's interesting. I hear that a lot, that when people have had some kind of accident, they're out of their body looking down with very little emotion, not like, oh, panic, I need to get back in my body, or even the opposite, not feeling like, yay, I'm out of pain. It just kind of, matter of fact, is that, and it sounds like that's how you were.
Yeah, well, yes, and so much so that I do remember trying to go back down into my body, and I remember feeling every bump of that hill, and just my head hurt so bad that I popped right back out. I didn't want to be there. It hurt. And so I was pain-free when I was watching. They did get me down to the bottom. They did a further analysis and said, hey, you need more, need to be checked out by, you know, better doctors. So my dad was able to drive me to the emergency room. And it was upon my arrival that they got me hooked up to CAT scans and all the new age technology back in 1986. But one of the prereqs that they had to do to see my head was to get me a CAT scan. And so when they gave me the IVP dye, the contrast, that sent me into an anaphylactic shock and it killed me there on the spot.
So you were allergic to the dye?
I was allergic to the dye and nobody really knew. Nobody knew. We didn't know.
Well, sure. Yeah, it's your first time for it, so.
At that point in the hospital, I remember I completely disappeared. I was sent up, and I'm going to say up because there was nothing scary. It was all positive and light and very, very happy. But I had been ejected up and sat under a really big tree. And when I say big tree, I envisioned this big willow tree, and it was very ethereal and just big, and the trunk was bigger than what I could get my arms around. So it's just a neat spot to sit. And I was not alone. My five-year-old mind tells me that it was Jesus that sat next to me. I'd say my adult mind now would say it's Gus, our God, universe, spirit, or somebody of that higher source. But I was never alone. There was no talking under the tree. Although there was talking, it was done via telepathy. So there was a lot exchanged in that regards, but nothing that was done verbally. I don't remember speaking at all. So I sat with, well, I'm going to just say Jesus to keep it simple. I sat with him, and surrounding us, there was probably a dozen or so other angels around us in a circle. I couldn't really see faces or anything other than that they were just white, angelic. I could see wings, and they were very glowy. I didn't see anything outside of a tree and the beings, and it was just like mountainous field, beautiful. It was almost as if we were inside a bubble looking out, so that holographic, you know, or kaleidoscope style, iridescent. It was beautiful.
You remember any more details? Yeah, you said it was really beautiful and stuff, but
I can say beautiful. I'm going to say earthly. To me, the thing that stuck out or sticks out is the big tree. I have an obsession with trees now. But very much the tree was just a willow-like, very flowy. As far as feeling, I can say it was ecstasy. And I can speak freely because I have used ecstasy to try to reach this state before. that's a later down the road. But it is that all-encompassing, warm, fuzzy hug. There is nothing scary about it.
You mentioned communication with Jesus. Do you remember anything that was communicated back and forth?
Well, and this one's harder to explain in that the communication was I saw the beginning of time and I saw an end of time. An end of time meaning like a big bang, and it all imploded in on itself. And then I was sent back here to Earth. So that's kind of how I was sent back. And the beginning of the time started with a big bright bang, right? And then I got to see an omnipresence, if that makes sense. I saw everything and anything all at once. That's really hard to describe. And coming from a five-year-old mind, it's taken me 37 years to try to come to this conclusion going, whoa, something did happen there. You come back with an understanding.
So tell me what happened to you physically after that. Did you come back into your body? Were they reviving you? Tell me a little bit about what you know about that.
Yeah. So coming back, like I said, that beginning of time, end of time, and then getting sent back into body was like coming backwards through that tunnel. So instead of going to the light in a tunnel, I was sent backwards to a tunnel. I woke up to the hospital bright light and a bunch of heads over me saying, she's here, she's here. At that point, I grabbed my ears and I screamed my earrings because they had taken them out to do the CAT scans and I had recently gotten them pierced. That was a big deal.
Yeah, to a five-year-old girl, yeah.
To a five-year-old, that was a big deal. And so, you know, at that point, my mom says, yep, she's back.
Hey, just a quick interruption. This month, we're asking for your support for the show. It's definitely a labor of love for Will and I, but it takes a ton of time and money, and we need donations to keep things going. For those that donated last week, we thank you from the bottom of our hearts. For everyone else, it's easy. Go to roundtripdeath.com, click on the little donation button in the upper right-hand corner. You can show your support for the podcast and help us move forward. We have had requests for video interviews. That's something that we'll be unveiling soon, as well as other improvements. Thank you in advance. Now, back to the guest.
So, yes, the return was that. And I guess that was it. We were thankful that I was back and I grew up a normal life. You know, I'm going to say normal. We didn't talk much about the accident or things that happened or what is the fallout of trauma. Putting yourself back together after an experience like that is quite unreal. Ooh, excuse me.
Did you have a long recovery?
You know, the recovery was not bad, actually. I remember being in the hospital for a few weeks just to monitor, and it was beautiful there. It was fun for a kid, and then released. After that, I mean, it was zip. We didn't talk about it. It was done. We didn't talk about the dreams, the PTSD of the dreams that I had. You know, there's a fallout after going through something that large and being five and trying to understand it.
Well, adults have a hard time processing. I can't imagine how much harder for a five-year-old.
Right.
Were you able to talk to anybody about what happened to you?
You know, no, not really. I have journals and lots of journals. So I did a lot of journaling to just get through it. I can say I found solace in music. My mom started me on music at a very young age. And I am thankful for that because that would probably be my saving grace.
That's beautiful. As a five-year-old, you're now changed. You're different than other five-year-olds. You've had an experience none of them have. And I'm not talking about the tree. I'm talking about this experience with Jesus and wherever you were and whatever was happening. Did you look at life differently than your friends as you were growing up?
Oh, boy. Yes. I would say now reflecting back, I grew up as a square peg trying to fit into a round hole. You know, I got into a lot of trouble and not intentionally. It was just unintentional trouble or trouble found me all the time. It still does. but I'm able to, I feel like now it's like I embrace it because that's my lesson and that's how we learn.
Was some of that from the PTSD that you mentioned or just because you looked at life differently than other people?
That's a good question. I don't have that answer. I'd like to say it's just because I see life from two different perspectives. I guess now as I'm coming more into a better understanding, right? I'm in a really good place. I can confidently say I grew up with what I call kaleidoscope eyes and that I can see auras around people and I can see energy signatures around things. So it can be quite, you know, intoxicating to go into public. It's a lot to process when you're taking life in through two different perspectives, not only visually, but that sensory, you know, our skin, I can take in perceptions through just this outer awareness that I have.
In what ways is that difficult?
It can be very draining. The more I'm aware of my own powers, right, and handling my own body, before I did not understand that aspect. And so it was very easy to get, I'm going to say, just consumed with whatever surrounding you're in. So if you're in with a group of friends that aren't so good, you're probably going to do bad things.
Have there been times when you've needed some extra sort of, some extra perception as far as who do I trust, who do I not trust? Is this a good person that I can trust and be with? Have you had any insights that have helped you with that?
No, because I got to a pretty bad period in my life that I shut down from everything and everybody and just became this recluse. And I think it was in that time frame that I was able to cultivate more of who I am. And the more I questioned that and the more I tested what I call my abilities, right? Ooh, I think I can do that. Oh, yes, I can. Oh, yes, I can. The more comfortable I became with just being able to go out, you know, more outside of my house. And as far as trusting people, you know, I still don't, but I feel I want to trust everybody until you prove me wrong. You know, you have to do something pretty bad to make me not like you. Because I like everybody.
Yeah. And then I'm guessing once that label hits, you're stuck with it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because if you trust people and then they do something to foul up that trust, yeah, it's hard for them to get it back.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. My kids are learning that one, too. You know, mom can be pushed pretty far one way, but it can come back and go the other way real quickly.
You mentioned, if you don't mind me bringing it up, you brought it up first. You mentioned ecstasy. Was there a time that you got into drugs trying to replicate what you felt here?
Absolutely. And again, this is just going back and reflecting, trying to make sense out of my chaotic life and what is going on and what the heck happened. You know, I also came to this big, what happened to me? And so it was in my, 0 to 18, my mom would say I was under her house and her rules, right? And so that it was pretty, a pretty well-oiled machine on what the expectations were from 0 to 18. I went to college, and that's when I realized, oh, there's no rules. Nobody to tell me no. And so I kind of went down a few experimental rabbit holes. There was some drinking until I discovered the drug scene and became what we called a hippie chick or a raver chick. I was with the crowd that would break into warehouses and we'd set up our DJ stuff and we would take a few ecstasy tabs or mushrooms or LSD or anything we could get our hands on at that point and dance and dance and dance until the sun came up or the cops shut us down.
Did it ever help? Did you ever get that feeling back again?
No. Well, yeah. Yes and no. I don't want everybody running out and saying, hey, this is what we need to do to die.
No, we're not advocating drug use for this stuff.
I'm not advocating that by any means. I can say there were a few times that I had those deja vu moments where I went, ooh, this is the same as this. Ooh, you know, this is a sense of familiarity. I'm familiar with that. And so that became very comfortable for me. I partied hard for a solid 2 years like that. Ooh, I'd say those would be the dark, those were the dark days. And then I ended up getting pregnant with my son. And so as the day I found out that I was pregnant, my life, like a light switch, I turned and I became this, you know, I'm responsible for someone else now. And so everything quit and I cleaned myself up and, you know, it's been all about my kids ever since.
That's not easy to do. Good job. All right, let's fast forward.
Okay.
Let's talk about your other experience. When was this and what brought it up?
And as far as, well, okay, so the other experience would be more post-divorce, and I'd probably classify it more as spiritual awakening. I just had a very profound moment in which I felt God. I felt God. I was teletransported to what I would call the pyramids. I was in my bathroom. All of this happened. I was in my bathroom. I had a meltdown and just life was real hard. I was raising 4 kids. I had just finished a real nasty divorce and I was a single parent. And that's rough. And then when I say nasty divorce, we had restraining order and a 7-year custody battle for the kids. So it was a very long road. I had reached kind of the end of that road and I remember going into what I call full surrender and just kind of gave it up and said, that's it. I had my meltdown. And that's when I was, like I said, teletransported to, I saw the pyramids. My hands are up like this because I was blocking the sun. It was bright. And I just felt that wash of just, again, that ecstasy feeling from head to toe to head to everywhere. And then I just fell down and just prayed because it was very, very real. Again, I was in my bathroom. I think the year would have been 2016, 2017, somewhere in there. And it was after that point that I really kicked it into high gear and started learning energy and became a Reiki master over the period of the next year and a half, 2 years. And it's just kind of carrying forward now. I'm going to say snowballing now into some really, really cool things.
That's great. Did you test out any religions in that process?
I am a connoisseur of any and all religions. I like to keep an open mind. I don't necessarily a daily practice I don't really have because I'm I like variety of everything. It just depends on how I'm feeling now. But I got myself the book, the Manly P. Hall, The Religions of the Ages. That textbook is like this big. And I devoured that. I spent probably 2-3 months reading that from front end to cover end. And then I was able to dive into what really grabbed at me from there and just explore.
You said that during this time, you felt God. Explain what that feels like.
Woo. We're going to go back to that ecstasy feeling. It's like putting on a warm, fuzzy sweater. Or it's an all-encompassing hug. It's an explosion of love. If you're into, you know, the brain analogy, it's your dopamine dose. You just got that explosion of dopamine in your head. A profound, hypersensory feeling.
Do you think that's the same thing that you felt when you were 5 years old?
No. They were very different experiences.
What did it feel like when you were 5?
Trauma. It was painful. That's why I ejected out of my body from, you know, that first start off of it. And the recovery of it was painful.
But you also said there were these really good feelings that you wanted to replicate later. So tell us about those.
So the chasing of, feeling that ultimate high in the form of drugs. And no, you cannot really recreate it. Came close, but it is not on that same level.
Yeah, I also wanted to ask about these angels that you said you saw. I'm going back to your five-year-old experience again now. Do you have any idea of who they were, what they were, or just they were just comforting beings that were there?
I think they were there to comfort me so that being alone with a man, I mean, that's a stranger danger in my opinion. And we were raised like in that regards. So I think they were just there to help comfort. And they didn't speak. They didn't make any sounds. There was no movement. They were just there as a presence.
And helped you not be afraid?
I'd like to think that that was part of that comforting feeling, or maybe they were helping to bolster me up with that piece.
So what have you learned from all of this that you can share that might help somebody else today?
How do you sum that up?
That's your job. I get to just ask. I have the easy part.
It's very short. You know, if you blink, you miss it. It goes real quick. I guess we all have gifts. Okay. Every one of us have this gift that's within us. So it's never too late to deep dive into your heart and ask those questions. I can say the universe, God, universe, spirit, Gus, wants us to know him. And he wants to work with us, you know, firsthand. He's always listening, and he's always there. He never turns off.
So what does that mean? How does that make someone's life better?
To know you're never alone. I think there's comfort because sometimes you really feel isolated and alone. And I know that because I've intentionally gone through isolation of myself to knowing, you know, that you're never alone.
Most people that have a near-death experience, when they're an adult, they come back having zero fear of death in the future. You know, they're not out committing suicide, but they're like, hey, when it's my time, I am so ready to go because I know what it's like. It's wonderful. Were you left with something like that? How do you feel on that?
I think maybe that's why I have my problem side is that I'm fearless. I don't fear death, and I really don't fear a lot of things. Like most people will get in their head and question things. I don't question. It's like that critical thinking is turned off for me. That died when my brain went off. I'm more in that responsive, you know, and that's part of that post-injury learning to turn on to that critical thinking, because most people do do that.
Is there anything else that you want to share before we go?
You know, embrace every single moment that comes into your visual sight, because it was put there for a reason. There is no coincidence in anything that does happen. And that's a whole nother topic, you know, synchronicity and frequencies and vibrations, and all of that has meanings in the world.
Last question. Did you ever go skiing again?
Absolutely. Every weekend. And all my kids are skiers. And yes, I face my fear. We do wear helmets, and it's mandatory. My kids wear helmets. I actually think I might go into this winter. I'd like to get trained to be a paramedic, an on-the-snow paramedic.
Ski patrol.
Hey, thank you. There you go. It was on the tip of my tongue. But yes, that's what I would like to do. I've reached that point. It's time.
Well, we need to get you and your family out here to Utah for some real skiing.
Oh, please. Yes. A huge fan of the mountains.
Okay. Rebecca, thanks so much for being with me today. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for listening and supporting the show. Just a reminder, click on over to roundtripdeath.com to make a donation, and we'll put a link in the show notes. Until then, I wish you every good thing that you're looking for in this life and the next.